Thanks for listening to the Roman Circus Podcast, a podcast that is back after a brief hiatus, after our long hiatus. I'm Matt Baker, and with me, as always, is just a overall good fella named Zach Mabry. Zach, how are you?
Matt, I am doing really well. I'm the reason we had to have the additional hiatus. I had to get through fall tax deadlines, so we had to put everything on hold, and it does seem like in the meantime, a lot has happened.
The one thing they don't tell you when you're going through tax guy school, tax person school, stealing from poor people school. Oh, wait, no, you do the numbers. You don't actually take the money. But the big myth is that tax day is just April 15th. Apparently, tax day is always.
It basically is. Like, if you look at the calendar in January, you know, 1099s, W-2s, payroll-type tax returns are all due. And then I guess you get a little reprieve in February, but then March, April, and May 15th are all tax deadlines for different types of entities. Like, personal taxes are April 15th, but you've got partnerships and nonprofits. But then all of those have a six-month extension, which is depending in a lot of circumstances, you end up needing that. And so then you have another round of deadlines, September, October, and November 15th. So yeah, wow. We just this month, 2022 taxes finally ended.
Wow. That's well, we're glad you're back. We're glad you're here. People have been waiting for that tax stuff commentary. If you want to know more about taxes, you can email us. Podcast at RomanCircusBlog.com. Find us on Twitter at RomanCircusPod. It's Matt Baker. Zach is at Zach Mabry, Z-A-C Mabry. So you said a lot's been happening. We made a big show of when we came back. We're like, listen, we're Catholic still, but we're not a Catholic podcast anymore. We still do all the Catholic stuff, except the podcast is not a strictly Catholic podcast. But in the time we've been away, a lot has happened. So we figured, you know, Zach, we figured we would go back to being a Catholic podcast for our end of November episode, because quite frankly, there's been a lot of stuff.
A lot of Roman Circus stuff has happened. There was obviously the Britney memoir. There was, you know, a lot of movement in the Catholic world. A lot of things that are, you know,
CM Punk came back to WWE after almost 10 years. That was another Roman Circus thing that happened.
That's right.
Long-awaited return. I'm sure you saw it. Was their highest, WWE's highest, like, YouTube/social media post ever. Got the most.
Does WWE, like, where does it air anymore? Is it still on cable, or did it get moved to a streamer? What's the scoop there?
Monday nights are on USA. Friday nights, for the time being, are on Fox. Big Fox. Okay. And then what used to be called pay-per-views, they're now called premium live events because they're on Peacock. So you don't have to pay. You only have to pay a Peacock subscription. You don't have to pay like monthly like you used to do. That's why they don't call them pay-per-views anymore. So, and
that also mirrors what happened with Peacock, is where they move Days of Our Lives. And so if you're a soap opera person, it doesn't come on NBC anymore. You have to have Peacock, and they drop new episodes.
Nice. So with Peacock, you get boy soap operas, which is WWE, and you get girl soap operas, which are Days of Our Lives. But the good news is both can watch either.
Exactly.
So they gave WWE just boatloads to just nest their streaming platform on Peacock for a few years. So WWE didn't have to give away any of the rights to anything. So like when the contract's up, they can just take it all back and shop it again. So
interesting.
Yeah, and it was like not an insignificant amount of money either. So
we need to get We should get Peacock to sponsor us. So I have like basically every streaming platform.
Of course. Yeah.
Because I want to go on my Apple TV and I just like don't want the friction of, oh, this is only on Max or this is only on Peacock mm-hmm. or this is only on Netflix. I'm like, eh. You add it up, it's not like a crazy amount. Though they have all been going up, like, but streaming TV, man, that's where it's at.
Yeah, they're all, yeah. I've been waiting. I canceled my HBO Max because I was hoping for some sort of sale, and all they had was an ad-supported sale. And listen, if I'm going to do streaming, I'm not doing ads.
That's oh, yeah. I've always said an easy way to get a few more out of me is to offer ad-free.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I pretty much anything, like YouTube. They're, I don't know if they rolled it out or they're about to, a Twitter version. Like, I will happily throw in a few more dollars if I'm not going to be advertised to. But I think that advertising and all that kind of stuff makes you insane. Like, I think because it, you know, with algorithms and stuff, it's designed to feed you back things that it predicts that you want. I think that if you're whatever version of crazy you are, it just like algorithmically takes you further down that path and you just get more insane. And so I'm always happy to like disable any kind of ads or personalization or any of that. Like even then, if you can't get rid of the ads, you can turn off personalization so that you just get random ads. And I always do that because I'm just like, again, I don't know.
I don't want you to tell me what I want. I want you to tell me what you think just the world wants.
Well, yeah. And I mean, everyone's getting crazier and there's got to be some cause. So part of me, I think it's that. So I try to avoid
mm-hmm.
like algorithms. But yeah, so a ton of stuff has happened in the Catholic world. So we want to, I guess, talk about it and address it. Maybe we kick off with Church Militant and Voris because
that was a big one.
Well, yeah, and I mean, in the sense, this isn't a gloating thing or anything like that, but like it sort of speaks to why we're not a Catholic podcast, you know, officially, in the sense of, I mean, Voris is a strange person
because like, we're squishy little baby boys,
right? Yes, but. It does seem like the trajectory for people that get super invested in Catholic media projects mm-hmm. is not good. Not all of them. Like, there's definitely, you know, media Catholics out there that do great work and they don't seem to be consumed by it. It doesn't wreck their faith or make them crazy. But, like, you're talking about, I don't know, Father Mike Schmitz and who else at that point. Like,
we are multiple time guests, Father Anthony Schirapa and Father Harrison. Throw your hands.
Well, but if you've noticed though, like they've both at different points deleted their social media or, you know, limited their audience. Like they both have a certain, like, prudence and detachment.
No, that's what I mean. That's what I was saying, that they know when it's, they know when it's time to talk and they know when it's time to take a break for like 2 months or whatever.
Yeah. Cause I mean, they have a lot of listeners and they could 100% be, you know, micro celebrities and they can lean into that. But like, you can see both of them have the sense of not doing it. And then Father Mike Schmitz is, you know, as far as priests go, like, one of the most famous priests, if you want to call it that. And he just seems to be like, you know, a good guy.
Yeah.
His media apostolate, his podcasts, you know. Are you listening to any of them?
I listened to Bible in a year, 1 year, and I just learned that he is doing catechism in a year. So I think I'll do that. I think I'm going to start before January 1st and just kind of go, you know,
it's good
at your own pace, really.
Friend of the pod, Taylor Schroll, is involved in editing for Catechism in a Year.
Really?
Yes, he is. And because he's very talented with media and podcast editing and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And I asked him kind of tongue in cheek, I was like, is there a contingency plan if catechism changes? Like, I don't know. Can we go a whole year with the same, the same catechism and, you know, what happens there? Cause you kind of never know anymore. What's it going to say next? Which paragraphs are, you know, going to change or
really,
whatnot.
So really leaves us.
But it does seem like, it does seem like some sort of stroke of luck that may be the case that there's no catechism changes in 2023 and the catechism in a year project can finish with, without that happening. But so Voris and Church Militant, Voris is out as the,
so give a little, if people are listening to this and they don't know for some reason what Church Militant is.
Sure. So Church Militant is a Catholic blog. It's kind of always been its own thing. They're associated with being traditional, but they're not. They are often on different pages from other trad or div or whatever outlets.
They're hardcore enough to be trad, but they loathe the SSPX, for example.
Yeah, like sort of this obsessive hatred of the SSPX, and I've not paid a lot of it to their reasonings for that, but
yeah, neither have I. But that's one of the things I noticed. Yeah, but it's like that. So it's not, they're not just like anything and everything that is trad is we love. They're basically just like, I don't know what it is that they love. They love controversy.
They also had kind of they're kind of heavily associated with a practice of like exposing sexual misconduct by priests and people in the church. Sometimes in terms of actual abuse, and other times just, you know, breaking vows, but that was always one of their big things. And I think it was 2016. It was brought to light that Voris had lived as a gay man for many years prior to start. Well, not many years prior, but for many years, and it was prior to him starting his media project.
Right,
he actually announced it himself. I think the implication was that it was about to be exposed, or somebody was threatening to expose him, so he just kind of jump the gun and put it out there.
Didn't let Milo Yiannopoulos beat him to the punch,
I guess. And it was mostly seen as like it was positively, like even people that weren't fans of his, like they were kind of like, oh, this is brave that he's admitting to this, or you know, blah blah blah. Like he didn't really get a lot of criticism for it. Since then, there's been various like people that have criticized it, but a lot of people were like, well, that's, you know, at least he didn't, I guess, allow himself to be blackmailed or whatever. So Church announced that he was out and that he had violated his morality clause, or, you know, the morals of the apostolate. I think everyone knows what they were implying by that. That nobody has actually specified, but you read the statement, you know what we're all supposed to think happened.
Right.
And then he put out this like 14-minute video. He didn't really say anything in it. I did watch the whole thing so that no one else had to. Like, you can see that he's suffering.
Did he talk about stop saying the rosary?
I don't remember that from it.
Oh, okay. Maybe.
But I mean, it was long, so it's possible that my eyes like glazed over. He didn't say what it was, or, you know, he just said he had demons from his past that he had been trying not to address, and now he has to go away and address them. And he seemed upset, but he also wanted to like point out that there's, you know, 40 other people that work for Church Militant, and he hopes continues on and that he won't be a hindrance to it.
Man, that's crazy.
I mean, I don't know.
40 other... That's a real operation they got.
Well, because it's a real, it's a real organization with payroll, et cetera.
Yeah.
I mean, our, you know, I communicate with him and think that he's great, but like Steve Skojec, who was running 1 Peter 5, like they didn't have, 40 people on payroll. Church Milton is a much bigger operation. And so he's out, and I don't know. I mean, it's sort of interesting because I kind of think about it in terms of all these different places where founders have been ousted. So you have, OpenAI, Sam Altman is out. You have, what's the guy that does the stupid hidden cam video, Project Veritas?
Oh, James, I was going to say James O'Keefe. Lindsay, but that's the other James, James O'Keefe.
No, it's O'Keefe. He's like the scheming Irishman.
He got down.
There's a lot of governance issues where boards of different organizations are throwing out the founder, who is also sort of the personality of it. Maybe less so with AI, but with OpenAI. But I mean, Boris is the face of Church Militant. I mean,
yeah,
I know there's more to it, and they've got like paid forums and memberships and stuff. Like
he's the face, he's the hair, he's the meme, he's everything about it.
They were sort of the go-to blog for the more the like sort of going to the Novus Ordo but agitating for more reverent liturgy type things. Like
yeah.
That was like the people I knew that were big Church Militant followers, they didn't go to the Latin Mass, and they, but they were always kind of not in the sense of being hostile, but they were always, pushing their priests to like move the tabernacle back to the middle and get kneelers. And they're kind of the conservative, traditional Novus Ordo-ish type people that are at regular parishes. And some of them like do sort of terrorize the rest of the parish who just wants to like sing their songs and whatever. But like that was their market. It wasn't something that was super, they weren't that embedded in like Latin Mass stuff. But so he's out. I don't know what happens to Church Militant. I don't have any ill will towards Boris. Like their stuff has never been my cup of tea, but I just don't have I don't really have the impulse to see somebody who maybe I didn't like all that much or care for, see them go through something bad and be excited about it. Like I'm not really wired for
that.
That's
not the way to do it, I don't think. Just as far as it, I saw people were, because he asked for like privacy or like something or forgiveness or something, people were quick to point out just like, I mean, your whole business model is basically like just dumping on people who are in your exact situation, right? Like they were very quick to start and maintain just as much heat as they could on people they thought were not doing good things. And so he's essentially asking for something that he never granted people in the first place, which I think is a very valid criticism. And it's basically a lot of the reason why it's just really rough to start like things like that. Like you can't start like a vengeance campaign and maintain your sanity or soul on that at all, right? And that's not to say that people in the church don't do wrong or people in the church shouldn't be held accountable, but like you have to be in an amazing,
if you're gonna dish it, you have to be ready to take it.
Well, yeah, and you also have to be in an amazing place spiritually to like ward off all of that. Like, because if you're staring down what you think is evil and you're just like harping on it and all you can do is constantly read about it, that's going to affect you, right? And so that's the thing, is like we here at Roman Circus Industries wish him the best and hope that, like we hope for all, that he lives a life of great Catholicism and he dies in a state of grace and goes to heaven. But at the end of the day, I'm not like gonna take up arms and fight for the cause of Michael Boris.
Right.
That's why I stayed away from watching. That's why I stayed away from watching any of his videos in the first place.
Right. And what I did notice is that there was like gloating about it, but it was actually mostly from people more on the trad side of things that either really didn't like the, like I said, the sort of fixation on opposing the SSPX,
mm-hmm.
Or people who, you know, there were obviously beefs between Church Militant and other Catholic media projects. And some people that it had personal divorce, there was kind of gloating from them. Or, you know, a sense of like, okay, we said he was a bad guy. Now it's proof and he's out. So,
yeah.
On the, I don't know what you call it, like libcast or Peter is type, it was a little different. They did point out that he did not offer people, you know, privacy and space to deal with types of matters when it was other people. You know, he was exposing them and doxing them and whatever. They pointed that out, but I really didn't see a lot of gloating from that group. And part of that is there has been this sort of weird connection between Church Militant and like where Peter is. There have been like prominent Church Militant writers, like David Gordon, who have also written for One or for Where Peter Is, an article about how we have to get rid of the Latin Mass altogether. And so that side of people actually did seem to, I don't know, like the, I saw their responses on Twitter and they seemed to actually be concerned for him, glad that he's gone, and pointing out that he didn't offer anybody what he's asking for in terms of privacy to deal with things. But there wasn't really this gloating that about,
yeah, I mean, it's
sort
not,
of the downfall of Michael Voris.
The gloating is rough because like you just, it's the end of the day, it's a person and it's a soul, and we don't want to lose any souls. And like, we're always just like one wrong step away from just total downfall in our own lives. Maybe that's a little too dramatic, but the point is like you don't, what are you gloating over? Right? Like it's not, it could easily happen to you.
Yeah. And there does have to just be that realization, like maybe not to the degree of any enforces indiscretions, but like everybody kind of has aspects of themselves that they don't want on the front page.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, whatever Boris did is not like exclusive. That's like the exclusive sin that gets you kicked out, right? It's not, it's just what happened to him in his situation. It doesn't mean that like you're not going to wake up and be like, oh no, I did so and so thingy thing, whatever. And yeah. And it just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not, it's just, we all want to protect the church and we all want to see the church thrive and we all want what's best for the church. So I can see on some level where, you know, that where Voris would think that it's his mission to do something, but like, I don't know, man, the saints were happy, right? The saints like obviously knew what the game was, and the saints, I mean, you don't, how often do you read about, say, I know you only read the one book this year and that was the Brittany memoir. So I'm speaking to, you know, the general church, but like, how often do you read about saints who were just like, just maddened, like constantly over and over by things, right? It's just not there. And it's not to say they weren't. And maybe if St. Francis de Sales was born in 1964 and he was just Francis so-and-so, maybe things would have turned out different for him, but he wasn't. And he, you know, it's just that what do we owe our faith in terms of defense versus just enjoying the fact that we're Catholic and Catholicism is the church founded by Christ and is what we need to do.
Yeah. And so I think it's best understood as like a cautionary tale of not necessarily, I mean, it doesn't mean you shy away important matters and things, but you you do have to kind of address your own issues first and kind of be mindful of your own weaknesses.
Yeah.
And appointing yourself as sort of the leader of a movement is a lot to do. And I think you have to kind of protect your own faith first. And that, you know, that's, we said that before for years, you know, we were like, if you can't go about your day and not know what this cardinal did or that bishop said, then you are putting your faith at risk, like, because you're going to get burnt out on this stuff.
Right.
But, you know, so yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens to Church Militant. Because, I mean, again, like
Christy,
I said,
Christy
they have
Niles,
something like 40 people. She is. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so the second in command of most famous of the Church Militant people is
out. Right. And I mean, there's 40 other people as part of that outfit, it sounds like, but, and not to diminish them, but it does, I mean, the face of Church Militant was Michael Boris with his kind of sidekick, Christine. And so, I don't know, who knows what they'll
start back become. Up as like Church Militant-ish, Church Militish. Like we're still kind of
maybe feisty. Church Peace Corps.
Yeah. We're still feisty, but not full on feisty.
Church Militish. That'd be kind of funny. I don't know, but so yeah, he's out. It's been a big year of firings though. So be
go on.
Prior to that,
yeah.
The sort of well-known Bishop of Tyler, Texas, Bishop Joseph Strickland,
yeah,
was relieved of governance duties. I can't remember how it was worded, but he is no longer the Bishop of Tyler, obviously still a bishop. That would require, you know, some sort of like laicization, or I don't know if you can just downgrade a bishop to a priest or if you have to go all the way, but that doesn't appear to be what's happening at any point. He's still Bishop Strickland. He doesn't have a C.
Right.
And
I get a C on that. I don't like a captain C. Sorry.
Right.
I saw a channel bad joke and took it. Let's,
you know. So Bishop Strickland is interesting. He used to be like notable because he was, you know, a charismatic younger bishop who was a marathon runner and, you know, into fitness. And like he wasn't really deemed as controversial. He was just this, yeah, charismatic young bishop who runs marathons and has a blog and likes to explain the faith and whatnot.
Right.
In recent years, he's become a bit more of a media figure, and some of his, you know, stunts or whatever you want to call them. Over the summer, the Dodgers were having a game where they were going to honor the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Well, when I heard that name, I don't know, I'm thinking like indulgences, you know, plenary, partial indulgence. Like I didn't even know what they were, but they're like drag queens basically. And they were getting honored at the Dodgers game. And, you know, this was seen as anti-Catholic. I always hate the framing of this anti-Catholic bigotry, because it's like, I mean, you know, that to me, that's like identity politics. And like, if somebody's mocking the faith, they're not being bigoted towards Catholics, like they're offending God. Like, you know, it's not really about you feeling like somebody's bigoted towards you.
Well,
but anyways,
it's not about like, yeah, it's not about me per se. Like I mean, admittedly that Dodger thing it made me sad. Like it made me more sad than a lot of these things usually do. And it wasn't like I wasn't sad because I go to Mass and I was thinking, well, how dare these people do this because I go to Mass. It was purely just like, this is really sad. This is just a sad event and like a sad action by these people.
Yeah, I mean, and it does seem, you know, it's a little disappointing to see that that's just like mainstream acceptable, like drag queens that sort of mock nuns and do this stuff, and it's like celebrated as something good because they also do charity type work. Like
I know,
yeah, I mean, people,
no one else does charity work,
right? And so that side of it, and right, the way that it was just kind of like seen as good or whatnot. And so what Bishop Strickland did, there was a big, you know, outcry on online and in the media against this stuff. And he left his diocese to go and, you know, be there outside the Dodgers game and like demonstrate against what was happening.
Right.
I, you know, he gets to make his own decisions, but I don't really understand why a bishop, I mean, it wasn't in his diocese. Like, I don't really understand why he was there.
Well, that's...
And that was when I sort of thought, this is kind of going in a weird direction.
To do that?
What do you mean?
Like...
By the bishop?
To be invited by Archbishop Gomez to come do that, or can he just do it?
I mean...
Can any bishop
right, he
go
did
and...
it. So, like, I mean, you know, they can go wherever they want.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you're going...
But...
And if you're going in acting in your authority as Bishop of Tyler, do you have to kind of get some permissions to do, I don't know.
Diplomatic, you know, ties like a visiting head of state. I mean, I don't know. I mean, when I looked at that, I think that there's sort of two viewpoints. There's people that say, you know, you have a duty to, you do something. What are you going to just do nothing? And I guess, yeah. It's not in your diocese, you know, not, it's not your monkeys. And it just, to me, seems like immediate. But that was,
yeah,
that was sort of the trend. I'm trying to criticize him. I don't have any, again, I don't have any beef with Bishop Strickland, but there just seemed to be a tendency to make these moves that were, you know, very media spectacle thing. And like posting tweets that people interpreted as him saying he no longer followed the Pope, you know, associating himself with Seat of a, because some of that people were caught off guard. Like a lot of people didn't know Patrick Coffin is a, like, doesn't believe Pope Francis is the Pope. And
oh, really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So to just be a typical Catholic answer, apologist, you know, smart, grad, whatever. Uncontroversial. Well, you know, he's gone that way. Well, he was a fixture at conferences before and people going to events with him. And so, I mean, you can give a certain amount of, maybe they just know that about him.
Sure.
But there was just this like series of things. And the mindset was always like, well, you have to speak up. You have to defend the truth. You have to do something. And it's like, I don't know that that's always true. Like there's still prudence and there still is this my area. And then am I actually accomplishing anything, you know, speaking up for the truth? Like, am I actually promoting the cause of truth? Am I helping more people see the truth? Or do I just have to, you know, do I have to die on every hill that I'm confronted with? And
well,
some people say yes, and maybe they're right and I'm wrong. But I think a lot of times you really have to not be consequentialist, but you have to, ultimate goal, and is this move actually in service of that, or am I just, you know, kneecapping myself by taking an action that isn't going to move the needle the direction I want to move it, and it's going to put me in the line of fire and whatnot. And so one way to look at it is, you know, he could do more good as the Bishop of Tyler, and he shouldn't have put that in jeopardy with some of the actions that he took. And then other people would say that's just the cost of, you know, I mean, that's the thing. There's different viewpoints here. You're saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, like a lot of people want that. Like they just want like consequences. Who cares about?
I have on the lips disease.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't really matter that they're not winning. It matters that they, you know, they own the libs today.
Because the most important thing, if I were in the Diocese of Tyler, the most important thing for me would to have him as bishop, right? Like we had Bishop Olmsted out here in Phoenix, and he was great. And he was great for the Latin Mass. He was great, or for the FSSP at least. And I know they were doing some consolidation, but he was making sure all the churches had tabernacles in the right spot. He was just basically like, he was solid and he was said all the right things and he wasn't online. He wasn't just fighting the internet war, but he was just making sure that this diocese was the best diocese he could make it, right? And I think the most controversial, probably the only time he ever got any scorn, is he wrote a piece talking about how James Bond isn't actually like a hero. He's just like a weak portrayal of masculinity, which you should look it up. It's pretty great.
Is that just because of all the like fornication or what?
He's just like an empty, he doesn't do anything except like just indulge and like, yeah, there's no like actual manliness to his vibe. But the point is, like, would I rather him just be like the outspoken person on Fox News who is a threat to be sidelined, or would I rather him just be Bishop of Phoenix for as long as he possibly could? Like, that the bishop part is a more valuable one to me, because I mean, I do think it's dumb and lame that Bishop Strickland got fired from his position. I don't think it's a good thing. I think it's bad. But the problem is, yeah, the next person they get in there is not going to be him, right? They're not going to follow up Bishop Strickland with a bishop that's even more Stricklandier.
Right. And that's where, again, you just have to say, like, do I want to be take Bishop Olmsted as an example. Do I want to be the bishop of, what is the diocese, Phoenix?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do I want to be the Bishop of Phoenix and, you know, fulfill my duties here for my diocese and like get things, you know, going on the right direction? Or do I want to fight media battles halfway across the country? Do I want to make myself, you know, willingly or unwillingly, the sort of figurehead mascot of opposition to, you know, the one guy that can take me out of this role? I just think you have to kind of, you know, you're supposed to be what, wise as serpents, innocent as doves. And I'm not seeing a lot of the wise as serpents.
His only job, that was his job, right? Like but the people who would say like, well, he needs to do it because the Pope isn't doing it. Well, it's not his job to be Pope either, right? So it's not, he has a very we all have roles within the church. And I mean, we can get to that if we have time about like the synod and people wanting more and more, but like you can play your role within the church for the glory of the church, and it doesn't have to be above your station, right? Like, that's why, like, with the hierarchy, and I know that this is a perfect world that we're not in, but like, everybody doing their job leads to like a glorious and glorifying of God church. And even if people aren't doing their job, you can still glorify God by within your position in your role in the church. So we don't have to, just because we may not think, we or someone else may not think that Pope Francis is doing their job as Pope, doesn't mean you have to take on his job too. You just do your job.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm even thinking back to COVID. So my Latin Mass parish that I was going to in Arkansas, the bishop said you had to wear masks and everybody just wore masks. And I mean, masks were stupid and we know now they don't work. But the question is...
We knew then and now.
It's like, do you want to pick this bone with the bishop? You won't like put a piece of fabric on your face for an hour, and you have to take a stand on that if it means maybe the bishop doesn't grant you a parish, or maybe that it just doesn't make sense. But people were like, no, you have to. It's a sign of communist takeover. And it's like, you really need to think about your battles. Like, do you want to have a parish?
Yeah.
Do you want to not wear a mask for an hour? You know, there's no ability to prioritize or have sort of a hierarchy of things. And people still disagree with me when I say I think that it was good that everyone at my parish just wore their masks and didn't make that a point of contention with the bishop when we were trying to get officially set up as a parish, which we had happen, became no longer an option to do that. Like, you're not supposed to have new Latin Mass parishes that are formed, and we got in just before the cutoff. And I mean, why would you even jeopardize that by opposing the bishop on something that at the end of the day, the facts of it are trivial? It's a piece of fabric on your face for an hour. Get over it. Like, yes, it's stupid. It doesn't do anything and whatever. Yeah. But why? You don't have to fall on every grenade. You don't have to die on every hill. Like, you can, you know, eyes on the prize, people.
People online got after Father Fryer in LA because, well, for one, he needed to, because his parish is like actual building was so small, but he built a tent during COVID because it was outside so he could have masses outdoors. And the tent is like twice as big as the actual inside of the building. So they can have more people and they can do more, you know. It's not an ideal setup, but they had that setup. And people were mad at him because he used money to build an outdoor tent to where they could have mass instead of using that money to fight like the COVID restrictions in LA. Like, they would have rathered him give it to like a lawyer or something to fight to have mass in their tiny shoebox church where they could only fit 7 people instead of having this outdoor mass where they can fit hundreds.
Yeah. So I wasn't in Dallas for COVID, but the reports that I got were that there were priests that would say mass and it was going to be at a certain time in a certain location. And, you know, the doors are unlocked. There we go. And that was when, you know, there weren't public masses, but these weren't that. This was just, you know, saying mass here, doors unlocked. There we go. And there were people that weren't informed of that because the understanding was they were going to go on their blog or they were going to make this big thing about how their priest was standing up for the truth.
Oh, blah, blah, man. Blah.
They were going to get it shut down.
Yeah.
It would be bigger for them to be able to say, our priest is good and your priest is, you know, a lib or whatever, than to actually be able to have mass available to them throughout the shutdown.
Yeah.
And you've seen that since the Latin mass has been banned, there'll be quiet masses that are not in violation of anything are happening, and people will want to, oh, this priest is standing up against the Pope and his evil blah, 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 and he's having mass here and there. And then lo and behold, all from the bishop gets it shut down. And,
yeah,
you know, that's, there's just no ability.
And it should. Okay. It should. If you're going to do that, then I'm sorry, but you ran afoul and you messed up, and that's the consequences.
Well, that's what they want, because that's more clicks and that's more proof that they're right. And that's where,
yeah,
and it's, again, I mean, there's no, you just kind of want to sit people down and be like, what do you want? Do you want people to go to the mat, more people to be able to go, blah, blah, blah? Or do you want to feel smug and, you know, like you fought the good fight, but it gets taken away?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are picking option two just over and over again. They're addicted to losing, and they have the libs disease and then posting disease, so they have to go on. It's like, I'm just trying to go to mass. Like, I'm not here to take a stand against the Pope and all this stuff. I'm here to worship. And so, you know, your activities are jeopardizing that. So,
yeah,
in the immediate context, you're a bigger problem to me than the Pope. Say that was Strickland's entire thing. I do think that he had started surrounding himself with questionable advisors who wanted to, you know, turn him into clickbait. And I actually think that he's totally, I think he's a good, faithful Catholic. And I think that, you know, he's young, he's still a bishop, that there's a lot that he's still going to be able to do for the church. And,
yeah,
you know, not having a diocese to look after isn't the worst thing that can happen. I mean, he can do ordinations, he can do confirmations. There's a lot he can continue to do, and now he doesn't have to make payroll, you know? So that will be interesting. I mean, I don't know, maybe he'll consecrate some new SSPX bishops, you know? I mean, that's coming. Like, they're obviously going to have more bishops, so I don't know when that will be, but I mean, the ones there's 3 left, right? And they're getting up there. It's been 40 years since the original one. So
wait, there are only 3 left?
Yeah, they did four, and the other one's still around. He's just, you know, he's broken off, and he's fun from a meme standpoint, Williamson, but he's not part of that anymore. So they have the three SSPX bishops that remain, and they're getting up there. So I mean, it's just going to have to happen. Like, I'm not saying it should happen, but it's just going to. I don't know when. I'm assuming it'll happen in a secret thing, and most of us will find out when those bishops are created. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe they should do like 12 this time. Like, it's going to be controversial. So just make sure you're fully, like, find some like really promising 20.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to do it, make it worth it, right?
I mean, so I don't know. I think that it wasn't surprising because he'd already had the visitation from the Vatican, and, you know, it looked to be heading that direction. And it did seem like, and we've seen this with other priests that we know, where the lore around them and the people turning their quotes into memes and like promoting them are doing them a disservice and, mm-hmm. and, you know, putting words in their mouth. But it seemed to be, it was like a showdown. He was asked to resign. Typically, that's how it works, is you're invited to resign, and then your resignation is accepted. That's what happened with Bishop Stitka in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
He was asked to resign. He refused. He was removed. It's very rare for a bishop to be removed. There were, I think the Pillar had an interesting write-up about it, but like, there have been bishops that are comatose or declared insane. And there was one, I think it was in the Pillar article, there was this bishop in the 19th century that was declared insane. And as a result, he couldn't validly resign. He wasn't assigned to tender a resignation. And so they appointed, another bishop as an administrator, but they actually did not deprive him of his see, because that is a big deal. And there were bishops removed by J.P. and Benedict. But in most cases, if they were problematic and they wouldn't resign, instead, it was sort of another alternative. Like, again, appointing another bishop and giving certain powers that effectively neutralize the existing bishop. But it's actually rare and sort of drastic, because the understanding is that a bishop properly installed has a right to his see.
Yeah.
So it is kind of a big move, but it's also something that is completely, entirely within the Pope's power, and he doesn't have to have a reason, and it's not subject to some sort of appeal. And that's the other interesting thing, is that if the bishop had been removed as a result of like a canonical process, like a review and there's notes and then the finding of the whatever committee is he's out, that can be appealed. In this case, can't, because he was removed purely on like authority
vibes,
which is something that's been, well, right, but it's, that's something that's been defined by ecumenical council. So it would be like going against dogma, more or less, to try and seek an appeal on this. So there's really no, you know, route. I mean, you can ask, but in general, the Pope does have the supreme governing authority, and he can depose a bishop if he wants, but it's rare for them to do so. And it's also destabilizing, because I mean, you kind of expect as a bishop to have stability of office and to be able to operate, and that you're not worrying about falling out of favor with a particular pope and being removed for no reason, or, you know, having not actually violated anything, you know, set in stone. Like, there's no crimes or negligence. It's, you know, you're removed just because. And that, I mean, that's concerning to all bishops. Like, people will say maybe removing Strickland is going to cause other bishops like him or more conservative or tradition friendly to be more, it's going to, you know, scare them and get them in line. But I think it actually also kind of communicates to everybody at every level as bishops that you're kind of disposable, and this can just happen, and there's now a precedent for it happening. And I don't think that it's, I think that if you're a bishop, I mean, they could probably say, okay, this guy was a bit of an exception because of his media presence, and he just seemed to like have to have something to say.
Yeah, but once the dam breaks, Zach.
Well, right. But I have to think that some of them think like, well, okay, so can I just be removed? I mean, maybe they are
sure.
More, Maybe they see themselves as better aligned with the Pope right now. But yeah. I have to think that there's certain things where it's like, well, it just doesn't typically work that way. And that to me is the bigger concern. The Pope effectively can't violate canon law. He can dispense himself from any of that unless we're bumping into like sins and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so but there are, of course, the people that there's the magic referee and the Supreme Court is going to reinstate the bishop. You know, I mean, they think that there's some sort of route to, you know, sidestep what the Pope has ordered. And that's simply not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to his Bishop Strickland didn't come out and say nasty things about the Pope as a result. He's basically said he's going to continue serving the church, you know, in his new capacity.
Very good. Very good.
He changed his Twitter handle. Now it's Bish Strickland. People were laughing at that because, like, Bish is obviously, like, just a way to say bitch. But
yeah.
I have a friend who's related to a bishop and they call him Uncle Bish. So, I mean, Bish is not like some sort of unheard of, you know, nickname for a bishop, but everyone kind of laughed at his new handle. But anyway, he, you know, I mean, I'm, like I said, very different case from Voris. We really know there's, you know, moral problems with Bishop Strickland. I assume he'll still be around and, you know, I hope that this basically frees him up to, do more for the glory of God and for bringing people to the faith. And I do cautiously hope that he kind of understands that the conservative traditional media complex will chew you up and spit you out if they can turn you into a mascot for your cause, whatever. And, you know, you get fired and you lose everything, but they got their clicks. So I would hope that he reassesses who his friends are, maybe looks at who recommended he take some of the actions that
mm-hmm.
set him on the course of being removed. Again, I just feel like most people understand he was not fired for just being too Catholic. Like maybe that was part of what put a target on his back, if you want to say that. But I do think people are like, well, there's plenty of other bishops that, you know, ideologically line up with Strickland who you don't see in the press all the time, and they're not really thinking
right,
they're about to get removed.
Yeah, but I agree with that.
So I don't know if he's more in the Vigano camp of like that. I mean, I think that he's very different from Vigano, and I think that he'll, I mean, you know, bishops had their big meeting, the USCCB thing, and he went and just prayed the rosary outside, and he, you know, again, he didn't mount some sort of opposition, heading himself up as an alternative U.S. church hierarch. Like, you know, I mean, he's not crazy at the end of the day.
Yeah. Someone else who lost their job that is also not crazy, but lost their apartment, lost their salary, lost their livelihood. Friend of the show,
Burke. Yes. Hot off the press.
So he... All right, so you were the one who filled me in on this. What are the details? So he basically got booted from his apartment and they took away his salary. And for what reason?
Well, so yeah, the background there, cardinals who live in Rome receive a stipend or a salary, you know, to provide for their, you know, living expenses, and so they can exercise their various ministries or whatever it is they're doing for the church.
Mm-hmm.
And then they live in Rome, typically in the Vatican or near it, in, you know, housing that belongs to the church or is subsidized by the church or what have you. And so Cardinal Burke has lived in Rome in a flat for a number of years. He, you know, under Benedict and for the beginning of Francis's papacy, Burke held really prominent roles in the Curia, the church's government.
Yeah.
You know, basically like the Supreme Court of the Vatican or the church.
Right.
And he was fired from those roles by Pope Francis, and he was made the patron of the Order of Malta. And
remind people why that happened.
What do you mean?
I was just making a joke.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, when he was sent as the patron of Malta, that was basically, that's like a retirement post. It's not a real job. Like, he was effectively put out to pasture.
Mm-hmm.
But when that happened, he said nothing negative about the Pope. When he was pressed on it, he basically said, this is how it works. We serve at the pleasure of the Pope. You know, he basically said, I'm continuing to serve Pope Francis. And he sort of famously, notoriously doesn't allow people to speak ill of the Pope in his presence. It makes him very uncomfortable, and it's not how he operates. When he's been critical of actions that the Pope has taken, it's typically been out of a sense of duty as a cardinal and as somebody who serves the Pope to, you know, try to help. I mean, that's what you need in any sort of leadership position. You need advisors. You need people that will speak it to you, you know, tell you the truth. You don't need yes men. I mean, maybe you need some yes men. And I'm happy to have lots of people that just say yes to whatever I say. But
yes, you are, Zach. Cardinal Burke, you forget, he did commit the high crime of going to dinners and having people have dinners with him.
Yeah, so that's another funny thing. Like, there's photos of him saying mass, you know, in wearing the Cappa Magna, which is the very long cape that the presider will wear at the beginning of mass. So they'll walk down the aisle and there'll be this very long cape, almost like a long bridal train type thing that's part of the procession. A lot of symbolic stuff behind it. And that broke people's brains. It's bizarre to me that it's such a big deal to people. I mean, I don't know, they're seeing it. And it's just a long piece of fabric. It can't hurt you, but people of,
unless you chirp,
likely was in the closet collecting dust. But I just think that there's people whose mindset is like, oh my gosh, he's wearing, even though we already had that and it was just collecting dust in the closet, it looks like to other people that the church spent money on several yards of fabric that could have been given to like one of those organizations that gives clean needles to junkies. Like, it just seems like this obnoxious austerity scold thing, you know, Downton Abbey fans. It's like a
slightly
Molly type, just
aversion
to beautiful, elaborate things and thinking that those are bad.
Slightly less annoying than how dare the Vatican have this painting when they can sell it to a billionaire for his yacht and they can give the $1,500 to charity.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same people that think it's good that, you know, Mercedes and different companies will just give cars to the Vatican, but then instead the Vatican will actually spend money on, like, you know, Toyotas and Hondas and stuff because it's more humble. It, you know, it doesn't really fit in with people's need for like ostentatious humility because it's, you know, beautiful and elaborate. So that was just a huge deal. And the funny thing is like, I don't think this is off the record because I've heard it from multiple sources, but Burke is like not, he doesn't like seeing photos of him in, you know, the Cappa Magna and like the giant vestments and all the elaborate stuff. He wears those things, you know, to worship God. He's not some like aesthetic obsessed person, and he doesn't like seeing himself exalted. And so he doesn't, I mean, he is apparently somewhat embarrassed or uncomfortable having to see photos of him in the super elaborate stuff that he's worn. But those are liturgical things. They're worn for the purpose of worship. He doesn't swan around this, you know, the city in it with, I mean, I don't know if people imagine he's like walking around Rome and he's got like eight people carrying his train and that's just how he is for the day. Like, these were in the context of worship.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
It's funny to me because just a few years ago, the Met Gala, the theme was Catholic imagination, and you had all of these American and British celebrities wearing, you know, either newly designed stuff that was inspired by some of the most elaborate Catholic liturgical items and vestments, or they were straight up apparently borrowing liturgical items from churches.
Oh, wow.
And like that Met Gala theme was really well received by people. People thought it was awesome. Everyone was like, slate, you know?
Yeah, but it's, yeah. I mean, it's better.
Apparently.
It's better when they do it instead of, you know, the bishops and cardinals aren't allowed to dress for their station in the church. But, you know,
yeah, like the only place you're not allowed, the only context where it's not acceptable to have beautiful and elaborate vestments and things is if you're using them to worship God. If you're wearing them to the Met Ball, If you're stringing them up at a museum, that's fine. But to actually worship God with these things, that's awful. Like, I've never understood that mindset. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane.
It's also just unserious.
Mindset of insane people.
You're talking about 6 yards of fabric, guys. You're not, this isn't like, they didn't like burn down the rainforest to, you know, print pamphlets. Like, it's dumb. So reportedly, so after he'd been fired and demoted and sort of humiliated a number of times, excluded from most processes, since Pope Francis has been Pope, there haven't been any general consistories or any kind of thing that brings all the cardinals together. It's always smaller synodal type gatherings where the guest list is controlled and it's not a general invite to cardinals. So he's sort of been sidelined and really never murmured against the Pope. He did speak out about doctrinal matters. He submitted a dubia, but like, again, always a certain amount of piety towards the Pope as these things were happening. And then what the media has reported is that the Pope said, Cardinal Burke is my enemy, so I'm taking away his apartment and salary.
Yeah.
Which, gotta respect it.
Firm Pope Francis we've always been wanting. We've been wanting him to come down hard on matters. It just so happened it's, you know, a matter we disagree with, but, you know, there it is. He did it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, gotta respect, just like, I don't like him, kick him out. But so he's out. There were some initial, oh, this has to be corrected, or this is that he can't do this, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, again, there's no procedural workaround, guys. Like, he can just be out. So far, no statements from the cardinal. There has been pushback on the quote, though. People are saying that what the Pope actually said was that he is a figure of disunity, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I mean,
that's worse.
That's the quote that was given to the media. So unless somebody lied, the media didn't make it up.
I hope he didn't say that. That quote hurt terrible.
What?
I hope he didn't say that. That quote's terrible. It's more lame.
And then the crazy thing has been the gloating, though. I mean, just people that it like made their day. I don't think they've been this happy since like the authorities released Barabbas. Like, they literally are so excited that Cardinal Burke has to move and that his salary was cut.
Yeah.
And I guess, I mean, that kind of stuff, like, I just don't have it. I can't think of somebody who that happening to would just make my day, but it.
Yeah, I mean, because you have a life.
Christmas miracle.
Right. The one thing, and we talked about this a little, you and I in our private chats, our two-person Patreon-exclusive chats that we have over the phone. What's going to happen is he has no salary and he has no place to live. And a bunch of trads in Kansas City are going to give him all the money he needs and find him an apartment to help him out. And basically what's going to happen is all of Cardinal Burke's haters are going to be like, see, and be like, well, yeah, but you kicked him out of his apartment. He has no money. Like, he has to live somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What is he supposed to go learn to code? Like, he's obviously going to continue to exist. I mean, he has a lot of health problems, so. And maybe that's why maybe that was part of getting rid of him. It's like, I mean, you know, he's constantly sick and in the hospital, like, get rid of this guy. But he's obviously going to continue to need somewhere to live and continue to have medical expenses and, you know, he needs to eat. So he's going to be getting money from somewhere. And I think he's sort of being set up to be criticized for taking dark money or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, again, like, got to give props to Francis for this. Like, he sort of like, I didn't like the guy, so I kicked him out. And then when now he's going to have to get money elsewhere, and that's going to make him look bad. So, I mean, you know, master move by Pope Francis in terms of vanquishing his enemies. And again, it's something that's completely within the power of the Pope to just do. So I don't know what will happen. I mean, you're not going to get Burke saying anything negative about the Pope. He'll continue to speak up about doctrinal matters.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he moves back to America. Who knows? You know, he's 75, so that's like the retirement age for bishops, but you can still vote in a conclave as a cardinal and things like that.
Gotta be honest, man. I thought he was like 85.
Yeah. The thing is like, yes, people understand Burke as a critic of Francis. And he is, you know, one of the people that's sort of exalted by trads as like, this is the good, this is one of the good ones. You know, before there had been Cardinal Pell, who,
RIP,
died from surgery. There's people do this with Cardinal Serra, who has also been fired from most of his roles.
Yeah.
But you know, that's where he is. But I also think that even his critics, if they're being honest, understand that he wasn't a loose cannon. He was acting on a sense of duty. He didn't take unnecessary digs at the Pope. He was also kind of he was also not a big fan of the SSPX, and he considered them to be in schism, which the Pope does not. To see him treated this way, I think that tells most cardinals like that they're, I mean, they do all serve at the pleasure of the Pope, that's true, but there's a certain expectation of stability, and I do think it kind of has to make people wonder, like, is this just how it works now? Like, if there's a thing, I mean, that's, to me, that's the lasting impact of these things, because at the end of the day, Burke is just one man. He's going to continue, you know, worshiping God and, you know, serving his duties for the church. The bigger question is all the other cardinals, and what does this mean for their, you know, futures, and what does that mean? I mean, I that's what I just have to wonder. You look at, like, each thing that's kind of happened in recent years with this papacy, and it's like parishes being shut down, masses being canceled, you know, where people had built up a certain sense of community and stability, and that was just all kind of gone in one weekend without any sense of remorse, and people were told they just didn't believe in the Holy Spirit if they didn't think this was good. You have religious orders that have either been shut down or they're forced to move so that the church can sell the building they're in, or they've had their constitutions and rules rewritten. And these were people that, again, they were went having a family or a career and agreed to basically be, you know, religious and stuck in a building forever, you know, worshiping. And suddenly in the middle of that, totally upended, you know, bishops at their diocese being removed without any sort of process, cardinals even, it's just kind of chaos. And how do you decide I want to actually enter this and I want to go pursue a vocation when you don't even know what it's going to be? You know, how do you, not that it needs to be about money, but how do you give money? How do you write a check to, you know, to do an act of charity and do almsgiving when you don't even know what the church is going to be by the time the check clears? I mean, that to me is the theme is just total instability. And then when you layer in the refusal to punish priests like Father Rupnik, and sort of the way that known criminal abusers are shielded if they're friends with the right people, you just kind of think like this is being run by gangsters. Like this is, you know, how do you attach yourself to it, and how do you order your life around it? How do you, you know, dive into your faith when it's so chaotic like it's been? And I think that's the theme of a lot of these things, is ultimately it's not really about Bishop Strickland or Cardinal Burke or whatever. It's this general sense of just total instability from what, I mean, I understand, you know, calm the afflicted, afflict the calm, but on some level, I think you're supposed to think that there's a certain ability to kind of rest in God or whatever. Like there's something eternal about it, and there's nothing eternal about it outwardly right now. I would say, I mean, not to be negative, but like what remains though is you can still go to Mass. Maybe it has to be the new Mass, you know, for now, unfortunately, but you can still pray the rosary. You can still be a Catholic. Like your faith wasn't in Cardinal Burke, or it wasn't in having the Latin Mass. Like those things are all still available, and that's the focus. But when you look at it from purely outward signs, it's a complete disaster. Really nothing redeemable to say about the last few years. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, that's the Rupnik stuff, and I don't know. At the very least, you want some level of consistency, and it's just not there.
Yeah. But so that's kind of our Catholic update. I know it's a little bit of a downer, but I, the moral of the story, again, is you can continue to, you know, live this out, and you can continue to do it. And, you know, cautionary tale about the media and being, you know, being a firebrand and outspoken. But, you know, you got to just press on. Mm-hmm. Still possible to become a saint.
Oh, man. It always will be. Before we go, you want to talk about Israel-Palestine at all? Just kidding. Just kidding. Sorry. Just kidding.
Yeah. Israel-Palestine. Something happening over there?
I don't know. I only know what...
My favorite thing that I've seen so far was that some store, I don't know if it was Target or Kmart or something, in gearing up for Christmas, they were selling Christmas hams, and they had this thing that was like Merry Ham-mas, like Christmas but ham, and it but it looks like Hamas, and so it was like Merry Hamas, and so they had to pull that from the shelves. That was nice. Upsetting to wealthy American academics and business people. So
wow, they just don't want Hamas celebrating Christmas. Hate to see it.
Yes. So
if anyone who wants fun updates on Israel Hamas, just go to friend of the show Jeremy McClellan's Twitter page and watch his videos. They're funny and fun. So
well, I think that's that about covers it. So thanks for listening. This has been a detour back into Catholic topics from our newly non-Catholic podcast. We'll get back to talking about stupid stuff next time. Yeah, so follow us on Twitter, subscribe wherever podcasts are available, and we will see you next time.